Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg, and Carl Carlson's on the line. Hi, Carl.
Hi, Fred.
Well, you know, one of the things that I wrote about just recently in the NoMTBF blog was the concept of there's all these different ways to measure somebody's skill set, right? We have the ASQ has the CRE with this huge body of knowledge, and they have a multiple choice test to basically check your vocabulary and can you find the right formula. The Society of Maintenance and Reliability Professionals has a certification. Doctors and lawyers and all kinds of other things. Professional engineers have evaluations. And almost all of them are in professional societies, are a mix of a body of knowledge of tools and tasks and considerations. And then do you know what they are is kind of the test. And do you know how to apply them in certain circumstances? But when I ran across an article when I was looking at the Bloom's taxonomy, and it was in relation to a course I'm teaching on the CRE prep course of how to prepare for one of these certifications, was even if you take that test, you might be good at the test, but are you good as a reliability engineer? What's the correlation between getting a certification or a college graduation certificate or a series of courses? If you attend RAMS, those don't necessarily mean you're any good as a reliability engineer. You know, I don't know if you've thought about this at all, Carl.
Yeah, I definitely have. Well, you know, thinking back to, many times in my career, I've managed groups of reliability engineers, and some of them were really, really good at the theory. They understood, they could teach and did teach theory of reliability and understood it very well. As long as you framed the problem in something they were familiar with, they could get into it and they could tell you everything about it. But take them outside of their comfort zone into the application of that in challenging circumstances, and it was the deer in the headlights. Mm-hmm. And so going back to the question, how does someone self-assess as to how good they are? I've always believed it's important to understand the theory, but it's equally important to understand the application challenges of the theory as part of that body of knowledge. In other words, it wasn't a huge value to have someone that was theoretically excellent if they didn't know how to apply it in all the different circumstances that comes up in the real world.
Well, that was one of the things I read about. It also reminds me of a Ben Franklin quote, where is this, a scholar knows how to name a horse in seven languages, but he rides a cow to work. So,
hadn't heard that one.
knowing the language, knowing the theory is one part. But if just because I know that I could develop a physics of failure model and characterize the failure mechanism and do all of this theoretical work to create this great technical breakthrough, that might take 3 years to do. And the team I'm working with needs a decision next week. So I might want to use a different tool, not the theoretically best tool, but I might need to go out and just do a quick experiment or use some experience and judgment and look up some, basic models that exist already and make a recommendation. So I think that the ability not only to just know the technical skills, and when and where to apply them, but it's also in context. Mm-hmm. So it's now the best way to know if somebody's really good, if the one way for a person to know if they're good is other people come to you because you have a long track record of good accomplishments. Your recommendations pan out. They make sense. You may help people solve problems that reduces failure rates, for example, identify it. All of the different tasks that we do, you do them well. And if you have a long track record of that, then you probably have a sense that you're good. But I would also argue that tomorrow somebody's going to bring you something they just invented, a new market to a new customer base, a new material, a new manufacturing process, in all of the unknown unknowns that come with it. So how good are you then?
Yeah, and let me be the devil's advocate this time. You were the devil's advocate last
that's,
SOR.
That's true.
Okay, so that's a good test to know how good you are. What I'm challenged with, or what I'm thinking about right now, is how do you become good? So how do we go beyond the theory? What can the practitioner do to stretch and to exercise those skills so they become good? Mm-hmm. And what occurred to me is because I try to do this when I'm learning something new, is I don't just learn the theory. I sit down and I write down on a piece of paper a bunch of what ifs. Mm-hmm. What if this? What if this? What happens if this happens? What do I do? And I challenge myself to answer the what ifs. And I'll give you an example. Years ago, I was auditing a Weibel class. I was just sitting in on it to evaluate it. And the instructor was doing the paperclip thing, you know, where you kind of wiggle the paperclip. And, mm-hmm. and the students were all counting the number of wiggle times. And, of course, he says, you lift the paperclip up to the top and you bring it down. And I asked him, I said, well, what if you make a mistake and you bend it too far?
Yeah, or you twist it while you bend it up.
And he looked at me, says, that's not the exercise. he couldn't answer.
That's right. Well, then your results are like real life and they don't apply.
Yeah, exactly. But that is real life. I mean, stuff happens and, you know, you're in the middle of a test and someone, you know, the equipment suddenly malfunctions or whatever. And then you have to decide whether you start the test over or not. I mean, all kinds of things happen. And those challenges are what makes for a good practitioner, not just the theory. So I think what ifs are a great way to learn.
I would phrase it as curiosity, you know, and for me, it's the same kind of process. And I'll admit, Carl, that you really are a good reliability professional. So I'll give you that accolade because I do respect your work. And so that notion, though, of the what ifs, the scenario of curiosity, is mm-hmm. one of the things I've seen in people that I would recognize as being a good reliability professional is that you ask different questions than the rest of the room does, right?
Oh, good point. Right?
So I think what distinguishes somebody from being merely certified, you know, and some would argue that I'm certifiable, but it's a different context, I hope, is that you're able to, and some of it is a curse, you know, it makes it difficult to get on an airplane because we're doing the what if scenario there and we're looking at the age of the aircraft and the pilot walking around going, there's no way he can see a crack that's critical in that quick walk around, those kinds of things. But that notion of saying, you know, if we were faced with a field problem, well, what are the various ways that could lead to that? What are all the possible sources of that failure? And how can we experiment and figure that out? Or if we're in an early stage of a product design, well, it's beyond how can it fail? It's how can we know that that's how it's going to fail? And it's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of scenarios and questions and filtering. But I think you got to start with the bucket being full of curiosity to, it's not just, oh, does this fit a Weibull curve or not? Mm-hmm. It's what's my outcome? What am I looking for? What am I trying to challenge? You know, Weibull is a tool I can plot the data on. But if I see something weird there, it's not a pass-fail on that tool. It's what other tools can I use? What can I learn from this graph as it is? You know, it's constantly being curious of what can be different, what could be better, what could happen. Exactly like that experiment you described, Carl, is, well, what if the customer twists it, mm-hmm. you know, 5 degrees every time they lift it?
Right, right. How sensitive is it? Yeah, this is a great topic, Fred. The when you said curiosity, I was also thinking of some other words like personal interest, and then the one that hits me the most is passion. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If you have a passion for your work, that's to me similar to curiosity. It's similar to interest. Mm-hmm. It's like the spirit of the work, rather than the details of the work.
Well, that's, you know, that comes out in these taxonomies I was reading about for the article I put together. Bloom's taxonomy and there's a handful of others, Miller's triangle, for example, and these others create a framework that you can evaluate competence. And the example I used in the article is you want to hire somebody that is capable and consistent with making change at a coffee shop cash register. And they may be competent at that particular task, but that doesn't make them a good cashier.
Right.
Right? And you see it. And when you walk into your favorite store, the clerk that addresses you by name or acknowledges your existence and addresses the experience that of being in that store has a different set of skill level, right? And they're showing competence with those skill levels. But it's knowing when and why and how to apply those things. And then in reliability engineering, with our very, very broad body of knowledge, just getting familiar with all of the tools we have is a challenge in and of itself. But then it's, when do you use which, and when do you adapt which tools or combine tools or modify tools to create new solutions? And that's where that passion curiosity bit comes in.
It does. We are blessed with an abundance of tools in reliability engineering, and some people are more versed or more skilled in certain tools than others. But that other dimension to the work, which is what are the limitations of the tools? When do you not use the tool? When is it advised, not advised? That's really important. And I also wanted to add this passion on this passion subject or the curiosity subject. I have three kids that from time to time they'll ask my feedback on a presentation they're about to give or a talk they're about to give, this type of thing. And I always ask them, I said, so they'll show me the slides or whatever, and I say, well, what about the subject are you most passionate about? And then I ask them to show me where that is in their pitch or their presentation. Mm-hmm. And that gets them involved, and it really opens up the discussion. And this is what I would suggest to listeners, which is when you're looking at the application of a topic, ask yourself, what are you passionate about on this subject? And bring that out, because that'll drive your questions. That'll drive that is really the essence of curiosity. And it'll show up in a much better, I think, more realistic approach to the application of a topic.
Well, you see it in a person. They light up when it's getting close to their passion element of it. And for reliability engineering, there's plenty of sources for potential passion. There's all kinds of motivations for how people work. But part of it is that the customer is delighted with their product. It actually works. Mm-hmm. Or that, you know, customer satisfaction is impacted, or that our company is more profitable. There's all these extrinsic type rewards. But there's also the intrinsic part. And that, I think that drives the theorist, I guess is the right word, mm-hmm. where it's they can fully characterize a failure mechanism. And that in and of itself brings satisfaction to the practitioner. It's, I think what makes a good reliability engineer, though, is that balance. I mean, you certainly can be passionate about the wrong things that then within the context of your organization don't bring value, don't add to the conversation. Likewise, though, is that you can be a really good theorist and understand and model and characterize and design a perfect test. But then again, it has to be in context to the decisions that are being made. So there's no right or wrong way to be a good reliability engineer. I think it really is a balance of the right skills at the right place at the right time. And I think what that circles back to, though, is that we're constantly exploring and looking for ways to get better at what we do. It's that learning piece.
Yeah, that's a good summary. The learning path, a lot of it's been written about learning organizations, but there's a learning individual, somebody that takes the time to expose themselves to some things that are outside their comfort zone from time to time, and then reflect on performance, ask people. I've often done this, and I really value when people do it with me, which is ask people for their feedback, and then listen and maybe adjust behavior so you grow and become a better practitioner.
Well, there's a whole series of articles I've been writing about this topic. Is part of it is that you have to be technically competent. You have to know what an FMEA is and a HALT test and what they can and cannot accomplish. But then you also have to have a business savvy. You have to understand that businesses and organizations run with other people and they're serving some purpose, and you have to put our work has to be in context for that. If our solution is going to put us out of business, well, it's not a solution, you know, kind of thing.
Right. And
then the third part is the people skills, is the ability to work, to play nicely with others. It's what we learned in kindergarten to a large extent, but it's the ability to influence others and to adapt and adjust and understand what the motivations are for the team that we're working with. And it's that mix of those three things that we don't necessarily get in universities and colleges and so on. The first part, certainly the technical aspects of that. There's plenty of workshops and webinars and seminars and university programs for the technical part. The business part, well, do you want to get an MBA to really nail down that? Go to the dark side, right? But you need to know enough to do what we're doing and put it in context. And then the people skills is a whole nother field. And I remember the very first class my boss sent me to that was on people skills. You know, literally the hair on the back of my neck was standing up, and my elbows were crossed across my chest, or my arms were crossed across my chest, and I was just scowling. And it's like, this is all hocus pocus, fluffy stuff. Just show me the data.
Yeah, fluffy.
Right, and over time, though, it has proven to be probably the most valuable part of what I do, of how I'm able to do what I do.
It really does open up opportunities in a person's career if they are solid on the fundamentals, but also have good people skills. It helps to accelerate career opportunities.
It certainly does, and I it's kind of that. Do you get opportunities because you're competent? I think so, in a well-rounded way, that as you demonstrate the ability to add value and solve problems, you get more problems to solve. You get more opportunities to solve problems and solve different issues. So it's back to the initial part, though, is are you good as a reliability engineer? Well, a certification or a class certificate or a performance review are all indicators of different pieces of that equation. it's more your attitude, your approach to your how you go about the business of being a good reliability engineer.
Yeah, how you go about the lifelong learning process.
I was trying to avoid it. I thought that was an old phrase.
Yes.
I'm trying to come up with a new one.
I couldn't help myself.
Yeah. But I think that's the key part. So anyway, we don't have a clean, perfect answer here, but I think, Carl, we're starting to frame that. And I think part of what we write about it in our on a regular basis and what we can talk about here is to help people understand that there's more than just knowing the names of all the tools. And I think that's a good first step.
Yes, it is.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up here. How do you know if you're good or not? Do you count on your manager telling you are a good reliability engineer? Or do they even know what you do? And so you have to determine that yourself. What's your passion? How do you, what motivates you in the field of reliability engineering? And, you know, let us know. It probably will spark Carl and I to talk about it here on the show, but we're certainly looking for your feedback. So head over to reliability.fm, and there's the different programs in the network. Find the Speaking of Reliability, and within the episodes pages, there's comment fields and so on. Plus, Carl and I are not invisible, so you can find us and send us an email directly. We'd love to hear from you. So with that, Carl, let's wrap up today.
Thanks, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.